should announce that tomorrow there will be no Senate Tax Committee hearing in recognition of the services for Senator Cooley. So we will not have Tax Committee tomorrow. Today we have three really big issues before the committee. First will be military tax credits or subtraction. There are three bills, Senator Miller's, my bill, and Senator Rust's bill. My intention is to hold them all over for possible inclusion, so we're not going to need to take any big aggressive votes today. We're also going to hear about the marriage penalty bills. There are two bills, Senator Howe and Senator Koch, and we also are going to take testimony on capital equipment bills. But it's not my intention today to be moving any of these bills forward separately. We're going to lay them all over for inclusion if there's no objection later. So with that, Senator Rust has asked that she be allowed to just stay at the committee table and that we just hear testimony on these four military bills. So with that, I'll ask Senator Miller to maybe join us at the committee table, if you don't mind, Senator Miller. And we'll ask the testifiers, Mr. Kaiser and Mr. Donay, to join us as well.
How are you?
And we may want to have an explanation of the differences of the bill, but maybe why don't we just hear from you, Senator Miller, about your bill, and then we'll talk about the others.
Sure.
So welcome to the committee, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1794 is a bill for an act relating to taxation, income, military service credit.
Okay.
Basically, what we're doing is we're eliminating the income-based reduction. And since tax year 2009, Minnesota has provided a $750 individual income tax credit to certain military retirees for their past military service. Under current law, this fully phases out at $37,500. The legislation before us today would give this credit regardless of income. It's notable that our neighbors to the east, Wisconsin, currently exempt all military pension income. It would be my goal to get to that point at here in the state of Minnesota. And I think, Madam Chair, you have a bill that helps accomplish that next on the agenda. So I'd be fully supportive of your bill as well. But with the current situation in the state of Minnesota, if we're not able to do that, I think this bill, Senate File 1794, helps. It's a good step in the right direction to help us become a more military-friendly state as far as our tax climate goes.
Senator Miller, do you know if Senator Carlson has a very similar bill? I think we heard it in state government. Are you aware of his efforts on this issue?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson is an author on this bill. I was not aware that he had another bill similar.
I think so, and we may want to ask staff if they would check and see if Senator Carlson's bill coming out of state government, I think it accomplished essentially the same purpose, and I think that it was referred here to the Tax Committee as well.
Okay.
I know you have some great testifiers here, and what I'd like to do before we have them testify is maybe review Senate File 2006 as well, so we can have the testifiers speak to both bills, if you don't mind. So if Council would discuss the differences between Senator Miller's bill and Senate File 2006, I would appreciate it.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, Senator Miller. As Senator Miller stated, his bill, Senate File 1794, is an income tax credit of $750, kind of off of the bottom line of Minnesota taxable income. Senator Ortman's bill, 2006, is an income tax subtraction. So this would be a deduction from Minnesota taxable income when that calculation is made, while Senator Miller's bill is a subtraction from or a credit from the bottom line of taxable income. And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, your bill also provides a phased-in subtraction, so it would be 25% of military retirement pay beginning in tax year 2012, and then increasing to 55% for tax year 2013 and after.
Thank you. And Ms. Moore, could you address the two revenue notes that we've received?
Madam Chair and members, the revenue note for Senator Miller's Bill 1794 is showing that there is a reduction to the general fund of $13 million, or a cost to the general fund, $13 million in the first year, and that increases by, I believe it's 3% each year. At to 13.4 and then 13.8 million. Madam Chair, the cost to the general fund for your proposal, the subtraction is 5.7 in the first year, and then increasing to the 55% subtraction is 12.7 and 3.3 in the out years.
Ms. McQuay, forgive me for getting your name wrong. I don't know why I did that, so I hope you'll forgive me. Can you tell us how many taxpayers would be affected by these bills?
In both instances, the number is about 18,000 taxpayers.
Thank you. Questions from the committee about the revenue notes or the bills? Senator Scoy.
Thank you. I have a question about the 18,000. Current law is that $750 up to $37,500, and Senator Miller said that he's expanding that, but that there is no cap. Is that correct?
Senator Miller?
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, that is correct. And the reason I'm bringing forward this bill is I've heard from a lot of veterans in southeastern Minnesota that really the $37,500 is too low of a limit, and they're getting phased out, so they're not being able to take advantage of that income tax credit.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Well, Madam Chair, what kind of rate would you have to be to have a retirement in the military of more than $37,500?
I think I'm all right.
Perhaps the testifiers might know that, and we'll take their testimony, Senator Scoy, if that's all right.
I'm curious of how it could be impacted by all of the retirees, because a lot of them aren't going to have this kind of income, I wouldn't think. I don't see how the people affected by this bill.
Well, I have a feeling that our testifiers can answer that question best. And so hopefully one of you will include it in your remarks. But why don't we hear from Jerry Kaiser. He is the Vice Chair of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. And we're so happy to have you here, Mr. Kaiser. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I am Jerry Kaiser, of Roseville, Minnesota, the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Council. And I'm also a disabled Vietnam combat veteran. And I have looked at this bill, and actually it's for the men and women, even now and from those past conflicts that shed blood for this country and serving it. Those who are 100% disabled, told them permanent, they've never had this particular opportunity to take this $750 tax credit, which is a good thing, because these men who have had this particular VA disability have troubles, and that that would really assist them in their tax reduction. The previous to this, you had to be a 20-year guy. I mean, I served 22 months, 17 days, and 6 hours, if you were counting, in Vietnam. And I volunteered, and stuff happened. And I would qualify for this thing, but for the first time in 41 years. So it's I think there's a lot of other veterans out there that they don't even know about these sort of things, and the tax consultants don't know about it either. It would be a positive influence in their lives. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. We also have Ralph Donay, who is the chair of the United Veterans Legislative Council. So, Mr. Chair, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you. My name is Ralph Donay, and as stated, I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. We bring together 34 veterans organizations to work, as our name implies, the Legislative Council of Minnesota, to come down and work with bills. To answer your question right away, Senator Skoll, that
Mr.
would have
Chair,
to be.
Mr. Chair, can I be a general if he's this?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, thank you.
It would have to be somewhere around the rank of E8. I'm retired as an E9, and my retirement pay per year, although everybody thinks it's millions, is about $42,000 a year. So I'm not eligible for any of this. But an E-8 would just about top out the $37,000.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's like a colonel or something?
No, sir. That's an NCO.
Non-commissioned
officer, the enlisted ranks.
Oh, okay.
For the officer ranks, my guess would be probably a captain or major.
Captain or major.
Would top that out right
and
away.
For the enlisted, it would be master sergeant or chief sergeant, or what's the rank?
Madam Chair, Senator, it would be first sergeant or master sergeant in the Marine Corps. I'm not sure. It would be a, let's see.
Chief petty officer.
Chief petty officer in the Navy.
Something like that.
Or a senior chief.
Okay. And then the officer's corps would be captains or majors or something along that line.
Mr. Donahue.
Yes, sir.
Is that a yes?
Yes, ma'am.
We're just keeping a record here, trying to make sure we have.
I brought with a handout, and I'll update these for the committee every year as they come out. It's based on the DOD actuary, which tells how much money comes out to each state in the United States, how many retirees. The question earlier was that there were 18,000 military retirees in Minnesota, but if you look at my list, you'll see that only 16,000 of them qualify currently to get paid. Some of the folks that retired from the reserves can't draw their retirement pay until age 62. So even though those folks are retirees, they cannot draw their military retirement pay yet. If you look at that sheet down the left side, it goes 1 through 50 for the states and our ranking. Minnesota ranks 33rd in the United States for military retirees living in our state. And yes, large states like California and Florida and Texas, some of those states that have multiple military bases in them, do have a lot of veterans that live in those states, because all the services that a retiree or a second career military person would use are right there at the base, and the people live in the communities where they worked for many years. If you go down the right side of that column, it lists a whole bunch of facts there for you. Currently, there's a little over 2 million retirees in the United States. You go down a little bit further, the next line down, we only have 18,000 or 0.88% of the military retirees or second career folks live in Minnesota. We've only increased that 0.06 of a percent in the last 10 years. That percentage should be 1 or 2% higher for the amount of industry that we have in Minnesota. And on the way in this morning, I was listening to the radio, and they were talking about technology and how businesses are looking for people who can perform the technology that they need to keep moving forward. The military has some of the latest technology in the world. In the Senate Veterans Committee, Bill Pops testified that only 27% of the high school graduates currently could enlist in the military. And one of the senators asked, how could that be? With today's technologies, we need a much better educated person in the military to handle the technologies that are there. When I enlisted, if you could fog a mirror and sign your name, you could enlist. I mean, that was back in the 60s. But the technologies have gone so far advanced in the military, even just some of the standard weapons that we use technology. So we have to have a much smarter person to get into the military these days. And with the decline of the physical fitness of our students, that's another factor. And some of the other things that you know, drugs and those other things, that's also helping knock that percentage down to 27%. But getting back to the sheet, the next line down, currently in Minnesota, we bring in about $318 million into the state's economy. Now, that doesn't cost the state of Minnesota anything. That's just money that's coming in the door to be spent here in the state by the second career folks that come back. You go a little bit further down, you see that it says 16,659 are being paid by DOD. Again, those reservists are not getting their retirement pay yet. That will come down the road for those folks. The average payment is only a little over $1,500 a month. If you divide all those folks out as to how much money is coming into the state. And the average yearly income is a little over $19,000. 8,513 of those folks are over age 65, which means a lot of them, they get cold in their bones, so where are they going to move to? They're going to head down south. They're going to leave Minnesota. But we'd like to keep them here. But many of the people that belong to the Retired Enlisted Association, which I am a chapter president, many of my members, probably half or more, are in their 80s. So that number is going to dwindle off if we don't bring more second career people back to Minnesota to fill the gap when those people pass on. Wisconsin now receives more than $42.6 million more into their economy from military retirees because they went tax exempt about 10 years ago. And that since they did that, spent over $250 million went into Wisconsin's economy that Minnesota didn't get because of all the people that moved there to establish their home after they retired. I'd just like to state one more thing here. You know, I was born and raised in Minnesota, graduated from Elk River High School, and I joined the United States Marine Corps in 1964. I traveled around the world, and whenever possible, I took my family with me. My wife and I lived in 30 different places in 28 years. We moved all over the United States to Japan. I tried to take my family with me whenever I could. But what did I give up during that time period? And this part's kind of hard for me. I gave up wedding anniversaries, birthdays, first steps, first prom, many of the things that you here in Minnesota get to see with your children. I gave all those things up, and I wrote that check out to our country that says, I'm willing to give you up to including my life. That's what I did for 30 years, from 1964 to 1994. But I'm not here to talk about the hardships and the sacrifices that the military folks do for our country. I'm here to talk about the future of Minnesota. I have attended meetings with those who are looking for ways to expand Minnesota's ability to attract industry to our state. Those same people are forecasting a shortage of qualified workers. Second career military are needed so that our state be competitive with industry in other states and cities around the country. The second career military folks are well educated. Most of us, by the time we hit 20 years, had a college degree because you have to keep advancing yourself in the military, or otherwise they say, sorry, go home. So I have a college degree, which I acquired shortly after getting out of the Marine Corps. And these technical skills, management, leadership, all of those things are part of what the military people would bring to Minnesota. On the financial side, second career military bring monies earned outside of the state into our economy. As I stated earlier, over $319 million per year come into Minnesota currently from the military retirees. And that income is spent on buying houses, boats, cars, snowmobiles, everything that many people have, but because we traveled around the world, we didn't own that when we moved back to Minnesota. Retirees, as you may know, bring their own medical coverage. We're not going to tax the health care system in Minnesota at all. We're qualified for either TRICARE or Medicare once we become old enough. So there is no strain. The other part that we bring is money for education. The current GI bills, we're allowed to give that college money to our dependents, to our wives and our children. So should we have completed our degree before we got out of the military, we can now allow our children and our wives to attend college, and we get those federal dollars into our Minsky system. So again, I ask you to think about Minnesota's future. Think about what it will mean to bring more military people into the state of Minnesota. I believe that if we treat people here in Minnesota as many states around the country do, that we can at least double the amount of retirees coming back to Minnesota, which would be probably a $500 million increase coming into our economy. Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. The current data I have here is 2010, and that's because the 2011 actuary has not been released yet. As soon as it's released, I'll calculate this information for you and get it out to you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Vice Chair, we thank you for your service as well as your testimony today. Senator Howe, do you have a question, comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to thank you for your service also. Madam Chair, we did have a bill last year that dealt with exempting military retirement pay, and I believe that was vetoed. We did have it in our tax omnibus bill, and it was vetoed by the governor. And I'm wondering if this wouldn't be something that we could put alongside of that to see what we can do this year.
Well, Senator Howe, Senate File 2006 on the agenda is the one that the governor vetoed, or very close to the one that governor vetoed. And I had an opportunity to speak with the governor about this as a jobs program, because I'm absolutely convinced that this is a good way to advance our economy. This is a tool for economic development. Of all people, it was a presentation by the Federal Reserve Board in Chicago that convinced me that bringing these retired military folks back to Minnesota would be good for our economic development, because they bring high-tech skills, they bring leadership. They'll be our next CEOs. They'll bring entrepreneurship here. They'll attract more investment here. And so it's a great economic development tool. I think the governor is more amenable to looking at it again this year. I think we're going to have more conversation perhaps about his jobs tax credit. I think this one compares favorably, and I think those are the conversations that I'm hoping to have with the governor, that he'll look at this issue again this year and maybe in a different light. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. First of all, I too would like to thank these two gentlemen and the rest of Minnesotans and citizens of the United States for their service to our country, not only to you gentlemen and our military men and women, but to their families. I think that's extremely important. To Senator Howe's point and to your bill that's next on the agenda, I heard an interesting statistic from a military veteran, and this gentleman told me that when our military men and women retire from service, roughly a third of them stay in the current area where they retired in, a third of them will go back home to where their hometown is or where their family is, and a third of them are flexible. And they're willing to move anywhere in the country. And one of the things that they look at is the military pension. And they'll move to states that exempt military pension income. So that's extremely important, and I think that is a step in the right direction. There's a list out there, several different surveys, best places for veterans to retire in. And generally speaking, the states that exempt military pension income are on that list. The state of Minnesota is not on that list right now, and I think we need to do anything and everything that we can to get on that list to encourage these military men and women to move to the state of Minnesota when they retire.
Senator Miller, I'm sad to report that I believe we're one of the least friendly states in Minnesota.
Madam Chair, we can change that.
We are working to do that. Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, Minnesota is in the top 10 of the least likely for retirees to move back to. I think last year I saw that we were number 2, but I know that we're in the top 10. And the other thing is, when people get ready to get out of the military, they have to attend what's called a transition assistance program. And one of the first things they show at that program to all the retirees as they're getting ready to get out is a list of what states tax and what states will not tax their pensions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me play devil's advocate. Detractors might think that we're going to give a particular class of retiree a special benefit and not address the same concern with other people that may have done service for their country. Plenty of federal employees that are placed, especially law enforcement, that are placed in the same amount of harm, sometimes even more dangerous than someone that might be in the military, especially during a military time when they're not involved in a combat situation. So how do we explain that difference to people that might be in federal law enforcement and have been working in DEA or tobacco firearms, border patrol, that type of thing? How do we explain that difference and say the military retirees can get this tax benefit, but no one else can? Help me explain that to my constituents.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Senator Limerick,
if you stop and think about it in Minnesota, you say, how do you explain that? You already have a class of people in Minnesota whose retirement checks are exempt. They work for the railroad. Back in the 1980s or 70s, when we streamlined our government, we took away the tax exemption from the military people. But the railroad kept theirs for whatever reason. When people argue that why should we do this for the military, let's match dollar for dollar in their salaries. I would like to have had the salary that people that work for the Internal Revenue Service, the FBI, the various federal governments, I would like to have had their income and working as I did in the military. They're talking about changing the retirement system totally and making the military people invest in a 401k. I think that's fine, provided the military people get paid an equivalent pay of what's being paid in the outside. I hope you understand where I'm coming from. Our pay is way below what we would be paid if we were working, say, here in St. Paul doing the same type of job. So, yes, the military do make sacrifices, and pay is one of the issues. Myself, at 20 years in the military, I was offered a six-digit figure job, but I stayed in the military because I believed in what I was doing. Because I did that, I penalized myself when it comes to drawing Social Security. Because my pay wasn't as high, I didn't pay in as much money, so now that I'm old enough to draw it, I can't draw as much as I would have had I gotten out and gone after that six-digit figure salary. So there are some things that the military do that I don't think the average person understands what's being given up when they stay in the military.
And Senator Limerick, to be the devil's advocate to your devil's advocate, I have to say there are two overriding reasons here for me. Number one is these folks left their families, went abroad, served bravely on our behalf to defend all of our freedoms every single day, 24 hours a day, in the most horrendous conditions, number one. Number two, as we've talked about it here, I mean, I always look at tax policy as being something a little bit different. And in this case, there's a very good reason to look at these folks differently and talk about it in terms of that economic development tool. If you're talking about law enforcement, most of those folks are here. They don't need another incentive to bring all their high-tech skills back to Minnesota. But these folks, I think it's in our best interest to do that, to encourage them to come back, bring these skills back, start their companies here, be our CEOs, be our professors, bring their families here, and build our communities here. I think they should be attracted here. We want them here. Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, this is a conversation that probably angels fear to tread in for daring to question something regarding this subject. But I'm going to nevertheless do it anyway because I think we have to have a public discussion. And, you know, I could understand that if a person was 20 years into a foreign field and he's getting shot at all the time, but I don't know if we've had 20 years of war in the United States where we're committing our people to combat exposure. We have had our certainly we're all familiar with the history of that. But on the other hand, these individuals have volunteered for this service for 20, 25 years, and it's their choice that they've stayed in this field. They knew the pay schedules. They've known the retirement benefits. Many of us have sat in the legislature for a long time, too, and we could go out and get a job that probably would pay three or four times the amount. But Does that mean that sometime in the future, some future legislature is going to give me a tax-free benefit because I happen to be a state legislator and denied an income for my family because of the service that I want to do for the state? So I think that's a question that we have to have, a discussion we have to have, and determine if that's an appropriate measure to pursue. It's probably going to be very difficult to vote against this and try and explain it back home. But nevertheless, no matter how we vote, this is a discussion that we have to have because we're making a special recognition of a particular employment class of people at the expense of everyone else. So I'm just broaching the subject because I think we have to have that discussion. I think some of these proposals are, and we've seen it from the past administration with Job Z. We've seen it with other special tax provisions for very narrow groups of people or employers, that they get the benefit at the expense of everyone else. And I think that I would like to caution the legislature, if we have a problem with the tax situation in Minnesota, it may need a more systematic total reform rather than take and pick particular individuals out. We have businesses that are leaving Minnesota because they claim that it's a tax issue or it's a regulatory issue. And they're going, and they're leaving the state too. But I don't think we would be making special tax provisions for particular employers. So I'm just saying we need to have the discussion and we need to kind of go in with eyes wide open on this.
Thank you, Senator. I think Mr. Kaiser wanted to address that, and then Senator Bach wants to weigh in as well.
Madam Chair, I appreciate your concern. It comes down to this, sir. I was just in for 3 years. I volunteered. But, you know, police officers, FBI agents, all those civil servants and such, they are here. They can buy homes. They're not subject to – they go home after work, and they're done. When you're in the military, you're there 24/7. I mean, at Vietnam, I made $250. You know, they fed me, and they gave me clothes, and that's the way it was. The thing about military officers and the same, they maybe make a little bit more. But the deal is that we volunteered. We're gone. We stay gone. Ralph was out there for 30 years. These people who work in this state, police officers, they can quit anytime they want. We're there. We can't quit. We don't choose not to quit. We're patriots. Not saying that they're not patriots who are civil servants. You are. You're working here for the betterment of the state of Minnesota. We're serving in a different capacity. The thing is that we are gone. These men and women are gone, and the other ones can buy houses. Most of these guys come back, they have to purchase a house. They buy cars. Their wife and family are going back to schools. The wife usually gets a job also. The income that we bring into this state is tremendous. Just with the disability payments that the state of Minnesota gets from those is pretty close to $250-300 million a year. I believe totally veterans bring in $1 billion in revenue to this state. So what we're trying to do here is give an organization that has served its country and the state of Minnesota a heads up for their contribution, and then with that, yes, it's going to take a little bit to get ahead, but that's why 34 other states are doing this. We'd be silly not to do it.
Thank you. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Miller, a little history and not a long ways back, but it was myself and Governor Plenty that negotiated this provision into law. In 2008, we spent a lot of time talking about it. So I feel some ownership of it. I was proud to do it. I thought it met some criteria of helping veterans who are in need by means testing it. But Senator Miller, my problem with your proposal is it's not paid for. And I'm not going to ask you how you're going to pay for it, because you'd have to raise some revenue to do that. So let me just explain to you how it's going to be paid for. This year, we're going to take $13 million from our K-12 kids. Where it's going to come from? I mean, unless you find some other language for this bill, it's going to come from our K-12 kids to pay for this. And in the next biennium, those of us that are still going to be here, and who knows who that will be, on top of the $1.1 billion deficit the next legislature is going to be wrestling with, we're going to add another $27.2 million to their problem. I just don't think it's responsible to just keep piling up debt like it doesn't matter. I mean, there's a new group of legislators going to show up here next year with a real problem on their hands. And we keep hearing bills here that just make it worse, like it doesn't matter. You know, maybe the assumption is none of us are going to be here, and a whole new crop of people will have to deal with the problem. But, I mean, I do think what you hand off to your successors is important. And we have some obligation, I think, to try and give the next crop of elected officials after us a fair shot. And we're not going to leave them a balanced budget. We all know that. Those decisions have been made. But piling more on it, pretending that the money's going to come from someplace, I just think that's a problem.
Where to begin? Senator Miller, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to address Senator Limmer's comments, and I appreciate his comments. And I think the comparison as legislators to military veterans is somewhat of an unfair comparison. I agree with you. It is a tremendous sacrifice to be a legislator, especially as a new father being away from home 4 days a week. It's certainly not easy. It is a sacrifice, and we're here because we want to help make a difference for Minnesotans. But our veterans don't have the luxury, our military men and women don't have the luxury of driving home at night if they need to, or being home on weekends. They literally are sacrificing their lives and their families' lives for, in many cases, many years. So again, we do sacrifice as legislators, but I think it's our military men and women do it to a different extent. So I just want to put that into perspective. And Senator Bach, I do appreciate your comments. And I don't want to get into this discussion today, but we have accomplished a lot over the last year. When I was first sworn into office, the state of Minnesota was facing a $5.2 billion budget deficit. And I'm not here to take credit for anything. I'm not here to blame anybody. I'm here to compliment the good work of the legislature and Governor Dayton for taking that $5.2 billion budget deficit and turning it into a $1.2 billion surplus in the matter of 1 year. And again, the political rhetoric and all the games and the finger pointing up here is my biggest frustration of being in the state legislature. My philosophy is let's work together, both sides, the governor, his administration, and let's do what's best for the state of Minnesota. And I'm sick and tired of all the rhetoric that's been going around and one side blaming the other one, one side. It's just, we did a great thing. We, the legislature, the governor, $5.2 billion to a $1.1 billion surplus. So instead of being negative about it, I think we need to have a positive message. The state of Minnesota is in much better financial shape today than we were 1 year ago. The unemployment rate in the state of Minnesota was about 7% a year ago. We're at about 5.6% today. But we still have work to do. We still have a lot of work to do. We need to continue to work on job growth, the economy, and making our government more effective and more efficient. And I'm convinced we can do that in a bipartisan manner if we put aside the rhetoric and the political games. Now, I'm convinced that this is a step in the right direction to bring more folks into our state. Again, I'd like to see us exempt all military pensions so Minnesota can be on that list of best places for veterans to retire. And guess what? If we do that, that'll pay for itself, because more veterans will be moving to the state of Minnesota, and they'll be buying homes here, they'll be starting businesses, either starting families or maybe having grandchildren here in the state of Minnesota. So let's encourage people to move to the state of Minnesota and not leave the state of Minnesota.
Senator Miller?
Madam Chair, I'm not going to take the bait.
Well, I think
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Miller,
there's no bait there.
Well, Senator Madam Bach, Chair, let me take no it just
wait,
briefly
wait.
Then. Just briefly.
Senator Bach.
Senator Miller, in order to balance the $5 billion deficit, we borrowed $2.7 billion from our schools. $2.7 billion. We borrowed another
Senator
$750
Bach.
Million from future revenue. That's $3.4.
I'm going to ask you, Senator Bach and
I'm
members.
All in.
Senator Bach and members, we are going to talk about the bills before us. I think that's maybe the most productive way to finish this conversation. I'm sorry it's devolved so far. Other comments or questions about Senate File 1794 or the merits of Senate File 2006?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I would just suggest that if we're going to decry the use of rhetoric, you're not engaging in rhetoric while we're decrying
Senator Dibble,
the use of
to
rhetoric.
The bills? To the bills, Senator Dibble?
That's my point.
Comments or questions to the bills? Senate File 1794 or 2006? Without objection, the chair will lay over both 1794 and 2006 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Madam Miller. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, thank you for being here today. Members, we are going to move on to another interesting subject, the marriage penalty elimination, Senate File 2002 and Senate File 1998. Both Senator Rest and I have bills on this subject. Senate File 2002 does have an amendment, and so I'm going to ask folks to support the adoption of an author's amendment. It's going to be passed out now. All right, and if I could ask counsel, Ms. Pollack, to discuss the A1 amendment that would apply to Senate File 2002. Ms. Pollack.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, the A1 amendment just makes a word change on page 5, line 2.25. It changes the word lesser to greater, and this is just to reflect how the Department of Revenue calculated the refund that is in Section 2 of the bill. And the second change is on page 5, line 31. It just deletes the year 2013 and inserts 2012, and this is for the purpose of the timeline under which the Department of Revenue must issue the refund.
All right. With that, members, I would move for adoption of the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A1 is adopted. Members, we are now handing out a corrected Minnesota revenue note dated March 5, which would reflect the changes made in the A1 amendment. And so if you would disregard the one that was in your packet. And with that, Ms. Pollack, if you wouldn't mind explaining the two bills for purposes of our discussion.
Madam Chair and members, Madam Chair, your bill, Senate File 2002, conforms Minnesota tax law for the federal law that was adopted to extend the increase in the standard deduction for married filers. Your bill would conform for tax year 2012 and then issue a refund for filers for 2011. So only conforming for 2012 and then issuing a refund for 2011. Senate File 1988, Senator Rest's bill, conforms Minnesota tax law for tax year 2012 only for the increase in the standard deduction for married filers.
Thank you. Senator Rust, would you like to discuss either of these bills at this point, or should we hear from our testifiers?
Well, certainly, Madam Chair, and thank you. That I think the bills speak for themselves. What we encountered in the past years has been, as we know, Minnesota is a conforming state to the federal tax code. And on occasion, for a variety of reasons, mostly because we do not have the wherewithal to support a conforming measure, Minnesota doesn't. And that's what happened with the standard deduction. And as you can see, it was a it has had a huge impact on Minnesota married filers, even if you just did it for the current year without the complicating the complications of trying to do a refund, even in the name of fairness, if you want to do that. It's fairly complicated to accomplish the refund, and it's also complicated to estimate it as the revenue notice indicates. But I think it's an important topic for us to discuss. For 2012 alone, it's $62 million. That's $62 million that Minnesota married filers just for this year. Now, it was part of the stimulus package, so it's only for 2 years. So even if we did the retroactivity that your bill does, which in a sense doubles that, although who knows how many people, and we've had discussions about dynamic scoring in the past, how many people would actually file for that refund. But the whole issue came to my attention from some constituents and also from some CPA acquaintances who said that they were encountering a number of filers who were having to do these add-backs and who were questioning it because they understood that we're a conforming state, and yet we did not do that on this important provision for them. And it's not one that was not that just went under the radar. It was very noticeable when they were filing their tax return. So I thought I think there's some other bills in that are more extensive in federal conformity that we maybe have not done. But this one, I thought, as obviously you did too, should be isolated for the purposes of discussion and the impact that it has on Senator, Minnesota taxpayers.
Senator Rust, I really appreciate your work on this. We had quite an extensive conversation about federal conformity last year because of
right.
It's just so important that Minnesotans get the advantages of the federal tax conformity, and yet we couldn't afford everything. We did include the marriage penalty conformity in our bill last year. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed that bill. And so I brought it back, as you did, because what's happening for folks that are watching at home, if they haven't already prepared their taxes, once they prepare what is their and identify what is their liability for federal tax purposes, if they're married, they have to go back in and recalculate their income for purposes of paying their state taxes, and they have to add back in a penalty of $1,950 if they happen to be married Minnesotans. And that's a very unfortunate policy for the state of Minnesota.
And Madam Rust. Chair, just in addition to that, I think it by looking at just this one item that we see when we don't conform, just how much impact the federal government has on what's that? Senator Howell's phone is ringing.
Should we answer it, Senator Rust?
Yeah.
Senator Rust.
But and you know, when there are other times when we have not conformed on appreciation schedules and things like that, but I just thought that it would be important, and certainly in response to a number of my constituents' concerns, to make sure that they know that we're paying attention. Sometimes, of course, it goes the other way. The federal government can make some conforming changes that, if we conform, bring revenue into Minnesota as well, and we should have just as important a discussion about whether we want to do that in addition to ones where it brings relief to Minnesota taxpayers, and so here we are.
Well, and members, there is a very important difference between our bills, and it was intentional. Senator Rest's bill would conform for taxes payable in 2012.
Yeah, it's just for mine. Is just
right.
For this year,
Senator Rest.
And again, the reason for that is in talking with council, and in their discussions with revenue, how complicated it would be to accomplish that. But I support your bill, too. I think we need, if we're going to do it, it is the equity issue is to do it for both years. And, of course, it goes out of it's only the stimulus bill was only from the federal government was only for those 2 years. So the federal standard deduction reverts for tax year 2013 back to the original one. But I'd support your bill, too.
Well, and, Senator Rest, I think that's a really important distinction and very important fact that there were only 2 years for which we could conform to get the advantages
right.
from the stimulus program, and the governor vetoed our ability to really accomplish that for taxes payable in 2011. And Senator Rest's bill would conform for taxes payable in 2012. I purposely asked that our bill be drafted for tax years 2011 and 2012 to see if there would be some way to go back and help Minnesotans obtain this conformity for 2011, and so that we could see what the impact was of the governor's decision to veto this, because now it would be administratively very hard
right.
to do this for 2011 and get Minnesotans the benefit of this. And so we have a fiscal note that has been passed out. I think, have you received it? The fiscal note, this note applies to the efforts it would take our Department of Revenue to go back and allow Minnesotans a refund for that $1,950 in income that they would have to add back for 2011 tax liability. And I know Ms. Von Mosch is here, and she might want to address the complexity of now trying to fix the governor's veto with conformity that I thought was very important last year. Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
I know you want to keep the rhetoric down, but, you know, there's only so much money we could borrow from the school districts. And
Senator Rest.
You can talk
Senator
about
Rest.
The, you can talk about, you've mentioned veto
Senator
now,
Rest.
Madam Chair, five or six times with regard to these provisions. So I just want to add that one comment.
Well,
there's only so much money we could borrow from the school
Senator
districts.
Senator Rest, thank you very much. Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair, Susan Von Mosch, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. The fiscal note was distributed this morning. Senate File 2002 does require the Department of Revenue to process refunds for the standard deduction for married filers. So it isn't that taxpayers would be applying for the refund. The department would be in charge of processing the refund. That is something that in the revenue estimate on page 2 identifies really one of the main issues, and one of the reasons why it is so costly for us to do this is we can do this fairly without too many complicating factors for people who file electronically. And I believe that's about 85% of the people. But for paper returns, we don't have the information available to calculate the return that would be attributable to the difference for those people who itemize. And so the fiscal note then goes in and assumes that all of those paper returns, approximately 50,000 paper returns, would have to be examined by tax revenue specialists and their individual impacts of the retroactive change would have to be hand calculated. That is one of the larger expenses of doing the refund. In addition, with processing a retroactive refund, we would have a greatly increased number of telephone calls coming into the department, both when it is announced and when people receive their refunds or if they're not receiving their refunds. And so there's a higher demand than on our telephone answering services, and that is also a fairly large part of the cost. So it really are it's primarily those two factors together that account for the bulk of the fiscal note, the administrative cost to administer this type of a refund.
Thank you, Ms. Von Mosch. We have some testifiers here. Todd Cook from John A. Knutson & Company, CPA, and Ms. Mary O'Connor, who is here, also wants to speak to the marriage penalty elimination, if you'd both join us at the committee table. And Mr. Koch, if you would like to begin by introducing yourself. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Todd Koch. I'm a CPA with John Knutson & Company. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Society of CPAs. Appreciate you allowing me to testify here. The real purpose of this, what I really like, is you're trying to make things simpler. I'm one of the few people here that you're going to actually hear ask to be paid less, not more. If I can actually get so I can charge my clients less by not trying to deal with some of these complexities, it saves them money. Because remember, part of a tax bill is also the cost of tax compliance. Wherever we can reduce the cost of tax compliance, we actually gave people a tax decrease. So I appreciate you looking into this as being a mechanism of tax compliance. Wherever we could simplify that method of tax compliance, it's nice. Because when I started this job, I had a lot of hair. I don't have as much hair anymore. So I'd like to keep the few that I have left. So whatever you can do to help me get that, I'd really appreciate. The other part of this cost is not only the economic cost, it is also the stress. A perfect example of the person that this impacts is my brother. I did help my brother with his tax return last Sunday for the exorbitant fee of dinner. And while I'm there, there was several modifications he had just on his Minnesota return. My brother is a very knowledgeable guy. But they're just an average folks. I mean, he installs security systems, and his wife is a customer service rep. Good people, but to do the Minnesota return, all these strange numbers were showing up on their tax return for Minnesota. Some of them were detriments. The $1,950 they had to add back because they paid down their home mortgage they didn't understand it at all. And so I explained, said, well, here's what's going on. That, you know, there's a difference between the two standard deductions. And it's unfortunate that Minnesota was put in this spot because they used to conform with this. And then because of the way the federal bills, where you start and it sunsets and it comes back and it disappears, how can we plan as part of the state legislature? So I appreciate you looking at a way to make this so people can understand their taxes, so people can help comply with their taxes, and people can move forward and save a couple dollars along the way.
Thank you, Mr. Knutson. Ms. O'Connor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Mary O'Connor from Brooklyn Center. I am married, but I believe that married people get too many tax benefits. And I've been working on my taxes, and I see the $1,950 that we'll have to add back. But I noticed that last year on the federal return, we got a larger standard deduction. There was a special worksheet, and I suppose it's because we were married, we got a larger standard deduction. And I thought that carried forward to the state. So I thought we also got that benefit here in the state of Minnesota, so I can kind of understand why we have to pay $1,950 more in taxable income. Income taxes are complicated and unfair, especially at the federal level. And Congress won't fix the problem. Minnesota can give a good example to Congress by fixing our income taxes. I suggest we tax all income after giving a personal exemption of $5,000 each, tax 4% of the first $50,000 of income, 6% of the next $100,000, and 8% above that. This is simple and fair. It would take away all deductions and credits, but this is simple and fair to everybody. I would also like to speak about the capital equipment exemption.
Ms. O'Connor, we have not begun that conversation. We are going to in a moment here, so if I'll ask you, if you don't mind, to hold your comments until we have those bills before us. Thank you for your testimony. Questions or comments about the marriage penalty bills? Without objection, the chair would like to lay over Senate File 1998 and Senate File 2002 as amended for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. All right. We are also going to take up today Senator Wieger's bill, Senator Howe's bill, and Senator Koch's bill. And I thank you, Senator Wieger, for your patience here this morning. We have upfront sales tax exemptions for capital equipment in three different forms. I think, excuse me, there's also a bill, Senate File 1902, submitted by Senator Ingebrigtsen. So we should have all four of those bills before us at this point.
Senator.
Okay. So we'll have Senator Wieger and Howe first. Who would like to begin, Senators? This is going to be bipartisan, I just know it, which is going to be refreshing today. So who would like to begin? Senator Howe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have got Senate File 480. It's a capital equipment sales exemption at the time of purchase. Currently, businesses that invest in capital equipment, they need to file for a refund. They have 3.5 years to file for a refund. And so this is really, there is a fiscal note with it, but it is actually just a tax shift because eventually it will catch up. But Madam Chair, first I have a delete all amendment. And if I could have counsel just explain the technical amendment.
We're going to pass it out first here, Senator Howell. Just give us a minute. Okay, members, it's now being passed out. It is the A2 amendment. Ms. Pollack, if you would explain the amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, the A2 amendment is simply a technical amendment. The refund provisions of the capital equipment sales tax exemption were actually modified last year with the first special session legislation. So this amendment just updates the references to that section of the law. It doesn't make any substantive changes to the bill, Senate File 480.
Senator Howe, more comments about the amendment?
No, just if we could move that, that'd be great.
The A2 is an author's amendment, and I hope members will accommodate Senator Howe with that. All those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment signify by saying aye. All those opposed say no. The A2 is adopted, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this would just streamline our taxation in this area where you would get the exemption up front rather than having to turn around and file for a refund for it. Madam Chair, I do have two testifiers that would like to speak to this.
Well, if we could, Senator Howe, for just a moment, figure out if there are any differences between your bill and the others. Senator Wieger, are there significant differences between the two bills?
Madam Chair, committee members, no, and I'm in agreement with the author's amendment. If you wish, I could just briefly address the overall intent, and then yield to testifiers.
Good. That would be good, Senator Wieger, okay. If you'd like to address the bills.
Yes. Madam Chair, this was a result of a meeting with the White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce. Senator Chamberlain, a co-author, was there as well. And when asked what is the most important thing we could do to address job growth, this was the proposal they suggested. And the bottom line, it's two objectives, reduce red tape, and two, to stimulate business growth. This bill will do that. And when we hear from testifiers, I have the chair of the board of the White Bear Chamber as well as a previous chair to testify as to why this will reduce red tape and stimulate business growth.
Thank you. And gentlemen, we also have Senator Koch's bill. And Senator Koch, are you willing to join us at the table as well and just explain what your bill does? And then I'll ask Ms. McQuay to come back and explain the differences in the revenue notes. Senator Koch, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My bill does differ from Senator Wieger's and Senator Howe's, although it doesn't. I support their bills, and I'd like to see their bills happen. But I've been enjoying your discussion you've been having this morning about the surplus, the $1.2 billion surplus, and being cautious with that. And so I've offered this bill in the spirit of trying to strike a balance. My bill has the upfront sales tax exemption, but it focuses on small businesses. Small businesses defined in this bill are 20 or less employees and less than $1 million in revenue. And I guess I'm not certain, Madam Chair and members, I like that number is a start. But what I'd like to point out is that this bill is scalable. So if we need to strike a balance, and I think we do, between getting some money into the reserves, paying back the school districts, but also doing some good things. And I think these bills do very good things about keeping some money in the hands of job creators. And I think that we can strike a balance. And so that's what this bill is offered in. I would also say that I focus on small business. And if we are going to scale this bill, I highly recommend small business for a number of reasons. One, according to the Small Business Administration, there are over 50% of the jobs in the country are created by small business. Two, small businesses are affected, I think, more adversely by this having to do a refund for two reasons. One, they don't have a lot of administration that sits around and has time to fill out paperwork. And secondly, cash flow is a bigger issue for smaller businesses. So while $25,000 for a large business, they might be able to wait for that. For a small business, that can be the difference for making a payroll. And so if we're going to do something scalable, and again, I would very much support Senator Wieger and Senator Howe's bill, but if we have to scale it, this offers an option, and I would suggest that we begin with small business.
Thank you. And Ms. McQuay, if you would explain the bills, and I'm hoping Ms. Von Mosch might be willing to give us a little bit more information. You may or may not, Ms. Von Mosch, know how many Minnesotans just don't apply for this. I think we had testimony on that. I don't know whether the Department of Revenue maintains that kind of information. I'm not sure where we got it from last year when we heard it, but maybe you can address that. Ms. McQuay, the revenue notes on these bills?
Madam Chair, are you going to take Senator questions at some point?
They're not leaving. We're just going to hear the revenue notes, and then we'll take some questions on it. That's all right.
I have some ideas and responses to the scalability issue.
Great. Sure. Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, Senator Howe's bill and Senator Wieger's bill are identical. They start for the tax year after June 30th, 2013. The revenue estimate is showing that there's a reduction to the general fund and natural resources fund of $102 million in the first year and $62.7 in the next year. The Senator Ingebretson bill starts a year earlier, so the costs are spread over fiscal year 13, 14, and 15. And then, Madam Chair, the Senator Koch bill has a slightly less cost because it does just constrain it to small businesses. The cost in the first fiscal year, 13, is $9.1 million, $6 million, and then $3.7 in the out years. I would also note that the revenue estimates do take into consideration that more people will take advantage of the upfront tax exemption than filing for the refund. So if we did score out into the future years, there would be a continued cost because not as many, for the reasons that Senator Koch said, not as many people apply for the refund.
Thank you, Ms. McQuay. Senator Rust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did do, when we, in the 1990s, when we got rid of the sales tax on capital equipment, and we didn't have the dollars to be able to make it an upfront exemption. But this was during the Carlson administration, and what we did was each year we had a schedule of reducing the sales tax on capital equipment until we finally got it down to zero. And there was a lot of attempts to halt that progression to zero, but we the legislature doesn't always keep its word, but during those 4 or 5 years, we did. And we didn't let that reduction stop. What I'm concerned about in your approach, Senator Koch, to scalability is because you set a limit on
where the exemption occurs, will that keep someone from hiring that 21st person or having that, you know, $1 million plus $1 in sales? So scalability, I think, is great. I'm not sure that this would be a stimulus to business activity for small businesses as they're defined in the statutes, but it seems to me that if we use the same model as we did before, that we could find a way of starting scaling it back, so that over a certain number of years we could get to a total upfront exemption, and maybe it would be like over a period of 4 or 5 years, just ratcheting it down, how much they would have to pay in the pay up front, and how much would be exempted, so that for everybody. And, or another way, instead of just small businesses, in terms of going after, we could do it sector by sector. And we've tried that before, too, with whatever, you know, with the codes that businesses are identified with by industry. We could say these particular coded industries get the exemption first. And I believe that we had a bill a couple of years ago that did that for the forestry industry, as a matter of fact. And Ms. Von Mosch maybe can correct me on that. But there are ways of doing it that I absolutely support moving forward on that are a beginning cost. But what they need is a commitment from the legislature and the governor to actually see the program through. And it seems like to me, Madam Chair, that we ought to start on something like that, because it is you're quite right in saying that a lot of small businesses, and Senator Koch, a lot of small businesses don't bother because it's too much trouble. The paperwork is like this, and maybe they don't make that many purchases. But it is a cost to them. The big corporations, they put it in their plan about when they're going to apply, and their CPAs and their accountants and that they use. But we shouldn't let a total cost discourage us from starting on this. But I think your approach to scalability might just have I know I applaud the motivation, but it might have a because there's not a phase out kind of thing with it, it might have a the opposite impact of what you intend.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Just for an update here, it's 10 minutes to 10. We have several testifiers here, so I'm going to ask folks if we can hear from those testifiers. I'll let Senator Koch answer briefly, then I'll ask Ms. Von Mosch if she has more information, and then I'm going to take testifiers out of order, so please be aware. We'll, when these folks are done, I'd ask Ryan Steen, Lana Seward-Olson, and Mark Jessen, the three of you, to join us at the committee table. Senator Koch.
Just quickly, Madam Chair, and Senator Rest, I appreciate your acknowledging the importance of this, and I appreciate your ideal about scalability. Scalability is one piece of this because of the discussion you've been having all morning. The second piece is the small business burden. And so I would be hesitant with the idea of focusing on some industries, because I think you're picking some winners and losers, and where do you start? And there doesn't seem to be any really method to that madness. Considering the other ideal of scalability, you don't relieve the burden of the small business. So, I'm open to that, Senator Rest, and I think we just need to keep that conversation going.
Thank you. Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair, I do remember that information from last year in terms of the number of smaller businesses that may be taking advantage of an upfront exemption that don't take advantage of the refund. I don't have that information with me right now, but I can get that and provide it to you at a future date.
Great. I appreciate that very much. Okay. Mr. Steen? welcome to the committee. And then we're going to move to Ms. Stewart Olson and Mr. Jessen. And the reason why, folks, is because these folks have identified themselves as business owners or folks working in businesses that are impacted by this, and I thought their testimony was a priority here. So, Mr. Steen, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Committee on Taxes. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today in support of Senate File 1482. My name is Ryan Steen, and I am the site manager for International Paper's Corrugated Container Plant in White Bear Lake. International Paper is a global leader in the production of paper and paper-based packaging. In Minnesota, the company employs more than 650 people at 9 manufacturing and distribution facilities. Locally, I manage a manufacturing facility with 120 employees, and we, as we say, we make stuff. If you bought a DiGiorno pizza or a Tombstone pizza, and it's come on this, this is actually what we make. We make all the circles that go under those pizzas. Just to give you an idea of that, and what most people call cardboard boxes that we like to tell them it's corrugated boxes. So that's what we manufacture in our facility. I'm also chairperson for the White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce, which is in Senator Wieger's district. We strongly support the creation of a sales and use tax exemption for the purchase of capital equipment. Personally, this opportunity goes back to my early days as a project engineer with International Paper. I was living in the Chicago area at that time, and my role was to prepare financial justifications for new capital equipment, and then after that was approved by the corporation, I would go out and I would install that equipment. I covered Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, and by far the most difficult location to acquire equipment for was the facility we have here in Arden Hills, Minnesota, the plant I represented here in Minnesota. The roadblock was this Minnesota sales and use tax. Today, 25 years later, a little has changed. So let me explain our specific concerns. As we prepare an economic justification for new capital equipment, we have to add the Minnesota sales tax on top of that initial investment cost. This makes it more difficult to achieve the cost of capital hurdle rate. Right now it's 32% in our corporation. And many times we lose out on expansion opportunities for our Minnesota facilities. International Paper operates more than 150 container plants similar to the one in White Bear Lake. And that's in 36 different states. Year after year, White Bear Lake and the other Minnesota facilities compete against the other Minnesota plants over a finite amount of capital investment. According to our tax department, in those 36 states in which we have operations, 25 currently exempt capital equipment from sales and use tax. Several others provide exemptions if certain prerequisites are met. We're not aware of any other state that has a rebate mechanism similar to that used in Minnesota. It is time-consuming for us to prepare and file the rebate claims. And, you know, we sound like a big corporation, but I have one accountant in my facility is all we have. Everything has gone to a corporate environment on a lot of those things. We are limited to just the two claims a year. The system is much too complicated. It can discourage capital investment. And I'm told by one of our chamber members in the accounting firm of Boyman Barringer that the number was 35% that didn't claim the tax rebate last year or in previous years. So please understand that a simple exemption could be the deciding factor in how a multi-state manufacturer decides where to deploy their capital investment. It would be much simpler and less costly for the state to administer as well. So I strongly encourage you to support Senate File 1482. Thank you for your time, and thank you in advance for the consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Steen. Ms. Stewart Olson, welcome to the committee. And folks, because I'm hoping that we will be out of here by 10 minutes after 10. That gives us 15 minutes to hear everybody, so I'll ask you to be brief if you can.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Lana Stewart Olson, president of Ideal Printers here in St. Paul. We employ 79 full-time employees as well as some part-time and temporary employees. Thank you for hearing the bill today. We've been requesting this change for many years and support these changes that would reduce the red tape that our business manages as well as improving our cash flow. We are a business that's more than $1 million in sales, but we still have one accounting manager who is also our HR manager working every weekend and this paperwork is definitely an add-on to her job. And also, you know, when we buy a piece of equipment, which is vital in this printing industry, it's very competitive, and we have to stay, you know, keep up with the Joneses in order to keep the business coming in. So every piece of equipment that we purchase, we have to add to our loans and our and the interest that we pay on that because of the delayed tax rebate. And then also the purchase of the equipment helps us to employ new employees with fairly good salaries. And in order to keep them employed, we need to keep adding to our equipment as well. So it helps us create more more tax-paying citizens. So Ideal Printers is very supportive of the Senate bills for 80, 1482, and 1902. And I thank you for hearing it this morning.
Thank you for being here. Mr. Jessen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You've heard from the big company, the medium-sized company. Now you're going to hear from the small company. My name is Mark Jessen, and I am chair of the printing industry of the Midwest and also president and owner of Jessen Press in St. Louis Park. And I have 14 employees, and I was here about 4 years ago testifying on behalf of a very similar bill. For the exemption of the upfront sales tax on capital equipment. And since then, we've experienced a little bit of a downturn in the economy, and I have gone from 28 employees to 14 employees. And I think when I testified previously a number of years ago, it was some of the same arguments in terms of red tape and bureaucracy and some of the expenses associated with that. And I think now I can testify in front of you that it's becoming more of a critical situation. Just with what's happened to our company and many companies like mine, cash flow is just an increasingly difficult situation on a daily basis. A lot of our customers are suffering under current economic conditions much as we are, and consequently aren't paying quite as quickly as they used to. And as Lana testified, we have to buy new equipment. That's just the nature of our business. We have to constantly be buying new equipment to keep up with the Joneses, keep up with the competition. And so any sort of burden on the ability to purchase new equipment, such as sales tax, it makes it more difficult for us to do that. So it's not so much an issue of convenience like it may have been in the past. It's becoming a critical part, a difficult situation to be fronting that money. So that's my testimony for today.
I appreciate it so much. Next, we're going to hear from Mr. Hesse, from Mr. Brommelkamp, Mr. Koch, and Ms. O'Connor in that order, and hopefully we can accommodate you all on this subject. Again, I ask you, out of courtesy, to be brief. Next was Mr. Hesse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I've testified on this topic numerous times over the years, so I'll just say we support converting the capital equipment refund exemption to an upfront, the refund program to an upfront exemption. And urge the committee to try to find a way to reduce this this burden. The previous testifiers gave all the reasons why it's good policy. We hope you can find a way to get this done. Thank you,
Mr. Hesse. Thank you, Mr. Brommelkamp. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Brommelkamp. I'm a partner with Olson Thielen CPAs here in St. Paul. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Society of Certified Public Accountants, member of the White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce, and a member of the Minnesota Chamber. I'd like to echo all of the comments that were made by the previous testifiers. Current program is an administrative burden to both the Department of Revenue and to businesses, particularly small businesses. I want to emphasize the 35% of those small businesses that are not filing. It's something that is almost a sense of fairness. This legislation is going to allow us to encourage Minnesota businesses to update their productive capacity, create new jobs, and become more cost competitive in their markets. So I urge you to support the passage of the bill.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Brommelkamp. And Mr. Koch, you wanted to testify about this provision as well, or these proposals.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with what everyone else said, and I just want to add just a couple things. One of the reasons that I recall that we dropped from the upfront reduced rates that Senator Rest was talking about to a refund is the state was very concerned that people, if there's an exemption up front, people wouldn't pay their proper tax. You know, so we'd like the state to make the decision on the refund. Every year, every budget cycle since 2003, the legislature has sought to increase the number of auditors at Minnesota Revenue. So now the odds of someone claiming a refund that they don't not paying tax on something that they should have is really reduced because the number of companies being audited is very high. So you'll be able to, if someone did not pay sales tax on something that they should have, you'll find it on the back end. Also, keep in mind that the revenue lost here, as people are saying, is dollars that actually should not have been received because they were entitled to them even as the bill sits today. And lastly, with the in recent legislative times when it wasn't as good, remember that the refunds were suspended. When the dollar threshold was hit, it was put in the bill to delay refunds till the following July. That really reduced the ability of people to have confidence that system would continue forward. The upfront exemption would show your support in continuing to support businesses to make good jobs and good investments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Koch. Ms. O'Connor, do you have comments about the capital equipment sales tax?
Yes. I'm Mary O'Connor from Brooklyn Center. Why do we have sales taxes on most goods, but capital equipment is exempt? Government makes laws and then gives exemptions to some. I suggest we end sales taxes for all and solve a lot of problems. To pay for this tax cut, we can end corporate welfare, reduce bonding, reduce local government aid, reduce property tax refunds, reduce the Metropolitan Council, or other ways you know of to reduce government spending. Thank you.
Thank you all for your testimony. Folks have questions or comments about these bills or questions for the testifiers? Seeing none without objection, the chair would like to lay over Senate File 480 as amended, Senate File 1482, Senate File 1902, and Senate File 1670 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Folks, next week, there will be no hearing Wednesday, no hearing Thursday. Next week, we have a very busy schedule. Tuesday, March 13th, we are going to complete our work on TIF proposals for Senators Senjum, Eaton. I have the Mall of America. Senator Bach has one. Senator Cruz's bill, Senator Limmer, and Senator Kubley. That bill will be presented by Senator Dames. And on Wednesday, we have a technical bill on the Homestead Market Value Credit 1831, and other bills for that day are Senator Howe, Senator Dames, Senjum, Gimsey, and the Public Finance Bill. With that, members, we are adjourned until Tuesday, March 13th.
See you later.